This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're going to be talking about, well, this is the area of employment law, but we're focusing on telecommuting from home to work and the rights and obligations of employees and employers. For those of you who may have some interest in this or may be doing it, I think you'll find this a very interesting program. I certainly, in preparing for this, have found it very interesting. My guests are employment law attorneys. They are members of the Executive Committee of the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar. Lisa Lawson, who's a partner in the San Francisco law firm of Pennington Lawson, and she principally represents employers, do you not?
That's correct.
Yeah. The other guest is Sharon Vinnick. She's a partner in the Oakland law firm of Levy, Vinnick, Burrell, and Hyams. And I believe you represent principally employees.
Exclusively.
Okay. So funding for your legal rights is made possible by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar of California. Additional funding is provided by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, the Family Law Section of the State Bar, and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. So let's do this. I understand that, is it Yahoo that has a big telecommuting situation, or is it Google, or both of them?
I believe it's Yahoo. Earlier this year, the CEO of Yahoo, Marissa Mayer, made an announcement that they were going to end all telecommuting for all of their employees. She justified it on the basis that she felt that the collaborative interactions between the Yahooligans were adversely affected by the telecommuting.
Really?
Yes.
I love that. Yahooligans.
I didn't make it up. That's what
they
call themselves.
Beautiful. I love it. You know, here's the interesting thing I find about that. Now, she at the time, I think when she was first either appointed or became the chair of Yahoo, she was pregnant.
She was.
And so now, does she have, at Yahoo, does she have a little room for her baby there with, next to her office?
That's in her office? The news reports have said that she created a nursery next to her office for her baby and the nanny. I haven't been to the Yahoo campus.
What do we do with other women who work at Yahoo who may be pregnant or who have young children and they can't telecommute? How do you deal with that, Lisa?
Well, it's difficult, Chuck, and it's interesting because based on what my clients ask me, Yahoo has sort of taken a turn that's different from the pack. Most of my clients are moving towards more and more telecommuting and are, in fact, oftentimes renting out space on the assumption that they're going to have people working remotely a certain number of days per week. And so, genuinely, people are not moving in that direction. More and more people are being offered the benefit of telecommuting. And, in fact, it's been said that in order to compete with other companies for the most desirable candidates, that you have to have some type of telecommuting benefit, that employees are currently demanding it.
Why is that? I mean, what's the advantage of telecommuting in terms of competition? I don't know what that is.
You know, people prefer to work from home because they don't spend as much time commuting. They can also sometimes cover family responsibilities. They can work at hours that are more beneficial to their schedule than showing up in an office from 9 to 5.
Well, that makes a lot of sense.
I think that people like that because there's a lot of flexibility. I mean, telecommuting is not for everyone because some people find it a little isolating. But for a lot of people, it is, you know, a great way to work a full day without spending 2 hours on the road and to be there to, you know, let the guy in who has to repair your dishwasher and pick up your kids.
Mm-hmm. What do you do about the employer being assured that this person is actually putting in the time that he or she says that they are doing? How does an employer know for sure that the employee is really being honest about that?
Well, I don't think you ever can be entirely certain. I think employers that have telecommuting policies or programs need to first make sure that the people that are offered that benefit are the type of people that will use it wisely. Mm-hmm. And so genuinely, people should be allowed to telecommute if they are, you know, have a schedule that they can regularly work and that works from home, or they have certain goals that they have to achieve, and those can be measured. But if an employer really expects somebody working an exact schedule or certain number of minutes per day, it's very hard to keep track of.
There's been some interesting studies that have been done about people who telecommute. Obviously, for a lot of people, it boosts employee happiness, but some of the studies also say that it boosts employee productivity.
Really?
Yeah, because people are very task-oriented. They're not distracted by other things that are going on. And for most people who are telecommuting, they have some very specialized specialize is the wrong word, specific projects and deadlines that they have to complete so you can measure whether or not they're accomplishing the goals within the given time.
What about if someone is going to telecommute, if the employer is going to permit you to telecommute and you as an employee want to do this, I presume that there is some kind of written agreement that most employers who are doing this right now will want the employee to enter into?
I think that's always advised, Chuck. I mean, if you have certain expectations of employees and what they're going to be doing from home, and you want to be clear about what type of equipment you're going to purchase for them and what type of things they're going to be expected to supply, you need to put that all in an agreement. And as we'll sort of talk about some of these different issues, there are a lot of ambiguities that can be clarified if you have a specific agreement with the employee and everybody's on the same page in terms of what the expectations are from the agreement.
Is overtime something that it happens frequently in a telecommuting type of situation? And if so, how does an employer be satisfied over the request for paying, request for overtime pay?
Well, you know, Chuck, a lot of employers don't allow non-exempt employees to work remotely because it is.
What does that mean by non-exempt?
So non-exempt means entitled to overtime pay.
Okay.
Somebody who has to be paid for every hour that they work. Mm-hmm. And paid overtime for hours more than 8 in a day.
That's an employee.
That's an employee.
An exempt person would be an independent contractor, I presume.
An exempt person is also an employee, but somebody who meets a certain requirements that require that they or that allow them not to be paid overtime.
Really? So, okay, I was not aware of that term.
Exactly.
So how does an employer then determine or be satisfied that the request for overtime is legitimate, assuming that there is some kind of an agreement along those lines?
Right. Well, they'd have to pay the overtime regardless, but there is timekeeping software out there that mm-hmm. employers can use, but truthfully, I'm not sure how effective it is because you could keep track of how much time people spend on a computer, but I don't know if you can really follow them around the house if they leave the computer or mm-hmm. they turn off the software. It's very difficult. I mean, obviously, you have to have employees sign time cards indicating the hours that they've worked. One thing employers need to be careful of is if employees are supposed to work a set schedule and they're signing time cards that indicate they work that schedule, but they, in fact, are sending emails to their supervisors late at night, an employer may be on notice that they're working more hours than what they're being paid for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Typically, I think the people that you find who are telecommuting are more of the executive level employees and less of line employees. Most of those employees are paid on a salaried basis, so overtime is inapplicable.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What if the telecommuting employee dedicates his or her particular part of the home, a room, let's say the office from which he or she works, telecommutes, and let's say that person is paying a mortgage. Let's say that maybe 20% of the overall square footage of the home is that office. And the employee says, well, gee, I'm telecommuting. I have to pay my mortgage. And 20% of my mortgage I'm paying actually relates to this room that I'm using exclusively for my work as an employee. What's the obligation of the employer to pay essentially rent for that employee?
That's an interesting question, and I get asked that a lot. And there is one case out there so far in California that I've seen that addresses this subject. And basically, the labor code in California requires that employers reimburse employees for any expenses that are, quote, necessarily incurred in connection with their employment. And the question arises, well, are my utilities necessarily incurred if I'm telecommuting, if I'm working from home, or, you know, is my paper supposed to be supplied by the employer? And the one case that's addressed this so far has focused on whether the agreement to telecommute was voluntary. And if the employee voluntarily signs up for a work-from-home arrangement and it's essentially requested it, then those are not expenses that are necessarily incurred in connection with the employment because the employee could have worked at the employer's office mm-hmm. and not incurred those expenses.
But you're saying then if the employer requires, if the employer directs the employee, I want you to telecommute, and the employee says, yes, that's fine, I'll enter into a contract, but this is at the direction of the employer, would that change?
Well, it may. So far, there hasn't been any cases addressing that specific issue. So, we'll see.
I mean, I certainly think that to the extent that the employer insists that someone work at home, there's a responsibility on the part of the employer to do things like provide a computer and a printer if things need to be printed. And whether that's going to go all the way to rent is a question that I think the courts have saved for another day.
And we'll find out at some time in the future, I presume.
Undoubtedly.
All right. It's our Call a Lawyer night. We have a number of very fine attorneys here who are here to talk with you off the air. No obligation. This is something that they are here to provide to you, give you some direction if you've got a problem in the areas of workers' comp, criminal law, family law, legal malpractice law, landlord-tenant law, labor law, entertainment law and business law, tax law and real estate. And tomorrow, Leon Baer, who's a certified specialist in bankruptcy law, will be available to talk with you on his 800 number, and I'll let you know about that as we get into the second half hour of the program. I'll give you his number. So for Call a Lawyer this evening, it's 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing a program on telecommuting from home to work, the rights and obligations of employees and employers. For those of you who are listening to us live, whether it's in the Bay Area or on the Internet at www.klw.org, in a few minutes I will give you our local phone number and you can call in and ask questions. Probably in about another 10 minutes or so we'll take some calls. My guests are both employment lawyers. They both are focusing very experienced attorneys in the area of employment law, and we're focusing on, of course, telecommuting. And there are many, many issues involved with this. They are Sharon Vinnick and Lisa Lawson. They're both members of the Executive Committee of the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar. So you've talked a bit about wage and hours laws, a little bit more complicated than the usual employee who works at the place of employment.
Yes, for sure.
A little bit more complicated, yeah. But telecommuting employees, for the most part, under the California law, if they do work more than 8 hours a day, would be entitled to overtime, would they not?
If they're non-exempt.
If they're non-exempt.
Right.
Okay. All right.
And as Sharon talked about, it's a not everybody is non-exempt. Many people that are allowed to telecommute are considered exempt, and that's why they're allowed to telecommute.
So if for example, we're talking about the employer requires that you have a computer at your home, and let's say you have your own computer, but this is obviously you have to have a computer to telecommute. Does the employer, generally speaking, have a responsibility to, if the computer needs to be repaired or the computer needs to be rebuilt or whatever, does the employer have that responsibility, Lisa?
You know, it's a good idea to set that forth in the telecommuting arrangement. And I've seen it done, employers do it two different ways. One is they supply the computer, and on the other hand, they might have the employee side supply the computer. If you supply the computer, it's generally your obligation to fix it. And I usually advise people, or advise employers rather, to supply the computer because that way you have control over it as the employer, and if you need to ever get it back, there's no issue about that.
All right, let me throw this one at you. The Americans with Disabilities Act requires reasonable accommodation. Let's say someone is disabled and has been working with an employer and becomes disabled, and it's going to be rather difficult. The person's brain is still fine, but let's say physically speaking, it's quite difficult for that person to be able to commute from home to work every day. What is the situation about the employee having the right under, let's say, discrimination laws to be able to telecommute?
I mean, this is the most common question that we get in our office about telecommuting. We advise employees, so they're calling us to find out what their rights are under, you know, the Americans with Disabilities Act or California equivalent. And the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission has issued guidelines saying that telecommuting is a reasonable accommodation. So on its face, there's certainly plenty of case law and guidance saying that telecommuting is a possible accommodation. Of course, the key in all of these situations is it has to be a reasonable accommodation. That's what the law requires. So if you're a truck driver, it's unlikely that telecommuting would be a reasonable accommodation.
Yeah, of course.
If you spend your entire day working at a computer or you are a call-in center employee and they can set you up remotely, telecommuting may very well be a reasonable accommodation.
Mm-hmm. What comments do you have on that, Lisa?
I think Sharon's exactly right. And the case law is split based on what are the requirements of the job. Does the job require you to be in an office setting? Oftentimes, employers have a fair amount of discretion in terms of defining what the job is and what the essential functions are of the job. So if employers believe that the job actually requires that employees show up to work because they have to be part of a team, then that should probably be set forth in the job description if they plan on dealing with any of these accommodation requests.
And it's important to keep in mind that telecommuting, when it's a reasonable accommodation for a disability, may be a requirement. But in general, there's no requirement that employees be allowed to telecommute. Even if a company like Yahoo had a policy that allowed them to telecommute, they can change that policy at any time as long as they don't adversely affect people who have disabilities and need telecommuting accommodations for that reason.
So if for example, help me on this, if you would. If a company does have a telecommuting policy, and if someone, you mentioned that a company does not have to permit telecommuting.
That's right.
So if a company has a policy of no telecommuting, even if an employee becomes disabled and would be able to perform his or her functions on a computer at home as he or she does at the office, under the California law or under federal, one or the other, or maybe both, right, you can't force that company to permit that person to telecommute on his or her own computer from home. Is that right?
No, I think that you can force
the
company in the situation where it's a reasonable accommodation for a disability.
Okay.
But absent that, there's no entitlement to telecommute.
All right. Okay. I gotcha. All right. Under the family medical leave, I think under California law, I believe we have under the California Family Rights Act, someone who is pregnant and is going to have a child, or maybe it's more than that, is going to have the ability to have 12 weeks of unpaid leave. Now, how does that apply in the telecommuting situation?
It doesn't really have any applicability in the telecommuting situation because she's entitled to have that leave free from work.
Mm-hmm.
So telecommuting is irrelevant.
Doesn't matter.
No.
But if someone is telecommuting and then has some kind of family medical problem,
they're treated the same way
as
any employee.
Okay. All right. What about injuries? How do you deal with that? What if someone, trips over their kid's toy that's on the floor here next to, you know, like Lisa Mayer, and she's got her little child next to her, and she trips on the floor.
But she was at work when that happened.
She's at work. But what if someone is at home and trips over the child's tricycle or something like that? Yeah. Who's responsible for that?
You know, I'm not a workers' comp expert. However, there is a case, actually, I think it's a California case, where a professor was working at home grading some papers and got up from his rocking chair and slipped on some of the papers, and the injury was considered compensable under the workers' comp.
Really? Okay.
So
you want to make sure if you are telecommuting that your employer has workers' compensation covering you.
You do.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let me see what else we've got here. And I think you've covered it pretty well in terms of who's responsible for equipment, reimbursement of expenses. If, for example, someone at the convenience of both the employer and the employee, and there's no disability here, is telecommuting, but the employer wants that person to come and meet with a team at, let's say, at Yahoo, if that were the case.
Right.
Come back from home and meet with the team here. Is the employer responsible for mileage for that employee? If the employee lives an hour away and it's, 30, 40 miles away, is the employer, Sharon, responsible to reimburse the employee for mileage?
I think probably not. I don't know. Maybe Lisa has a different view about this. But, you know, if your principal place of business is not at your home and you're being given as an accommodation or a flexibility that you can work at home, asking you to come into the office for a meeting I don't think is compensable, either in terms of time or mileage.
What do you think, Lisa?
I think I agree.
You do?
Yeah, I think ordinary commute time is not considered compensable or reimbursable in terms of mileage. So as long as you define that the ordinary commute sometimes involves coming back to the office, I don't think there's any question that it's not compensable.
All right. Okay. It's I see some attorneys now for Call a Lawyer who are talking, I think, to themselves. That's not what we want. We want them talking to you. So if you'd like to speak to any one of our attorneys for Call a Lawyer, it's 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. Also, if you have an employment law question, and not just on telecommuting, but my guests here are very experienced employment law attorneys. So if you have a question, whether you're an employee or an employer and would like to call in, the number here to be on the program to call and speak to my guests on the program is 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. And don't be bashful. And for those of you who would like to speak to any one of the attorneys on the variety of topics that we have tonight, again, that's 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing employment law, and we've started with the focusing on telecommuting from home to work, the rights and obligations of employees and employers. My guests are members of the Executive Committee of the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, which I want to say has been a major funder of this program for many, many years. I think it's close to 20 years, which I'm very proud of, and I've had some very dedicated employment law attorneys who have been on the program several times and been real advocates for providing this kind of information to you, and I hope you find it valuable. My guests on this segment of the program are Lisa Lawson and Sharon Vinnick, and hopefully you will call in, ask a question, make a comment. What have we not touched upon in terms of telecommuting that you would like to talk about that you feel would be helpful to the general audience?
Well, one thing I think is important is for people to be realistic in evaluating whether telecommuting is something that is going to be a good fit for them. You know, I personally have telecommuted for years. I have an office in Oakland and live on the other side of the bay, so I only go into the office 3 days a week. Mm. And I find that, you know, I'm very efficient working at home, but not everybody feels that way. Some people, you know, don't have a house that's set up in a way that makes that an effective situation. Some people find themselves too distracted. And some people find it's too isolating because mm-hmm. you are by yourself all day.
It is pretty isolating. Yeah.
I don't find that way, but I have found that over the years, there are certain tasks I allocate to do on the days that I'm telecommuting. Mm-hmm. You know, working on a brief where mm-hmm. I'm not going to get distractions, it's a great thing to do at home. Meeting with a client, not so much. Mm-hmm. So I think people do need to be realistic when asking for telecommuting arrangement, whether that's going to work for them.
What if the employer wants you to telecommute? In other words, this is not something that you really are urging the employer to let you do, but the employer wants you to do this, and you don't feel good about that. What flexibility does the employee have there, if any, if the employer says, I want you to telecommute? Lisa?
Well, I think the employer generally is able to define what the job entails. So, you know, I think that you don't have a whole lot of flexibility.
Really? Mm-hmm. So the employer can direct you to do it, and you better do it. Is that right?
Yeah.
And I think that's even true in situations where you've been working at the office and the employer decides that they're going to reorganize their workforce in such a way that, you know, people are going to have to telecommute. Mm-hmm. Even a change in circumstance like that, I don't think makes it, you know, illegal for the employer to insist that you work at home.
Okay. Art, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Need help.
Hi. You're on the air. Art, are you there? Did we lose Art already? What happened, Art? I guess we lost Art. Art, I'm sorry we lost you. Call again if you would. We'll get you on the air. I don't know what happened there. In any event, all right. We have just a few minutes left in the statewide version of the program. And then we will go and take more calls in the second half hour. So in terms of, I think we have someone, do we have someone on a second line that we could have on the air? I guess we're taking a little bit of time. I don't know why, but we need to get somebody on the air if we can. But what else would you like to include in the statewide version, which goes out through to a number of stations throughout California?
Well, I think this follows up on Sharon's point in terms of who is an appropriate candidate for telecommuting, whether it actually works for people. The fact is that as this benefit has been allowed for more and more people, there's been new studies that have been come out saying that there may be a flexibility stigma that attaches to people that take advantage of work-from-home arrangements. And so even though I think telecommuting was initially very much championed by the women's rights movement as a way of including women who have had babies and who need more flexible schedules, newer studies that are coming out now are saying that it may not actually promote women in the workplace, that in some ways that people take advantage of these programs, suffer from a stigma where they receive fewer promotions, fewer pay increases, and harsher performance criticism.
Is that your understanding also, Sharon?
I haven't seen the studies that Lisa's talking about, but I know from my experience and from the experience of people that I work with, there's often a sense, like, what are you doing when you're at home? So there's this questioning.
So there's suspicion.
There's
a lot
of
what are
suspicion.
You doing, babe, at home, huh? We're working here, and what are you doing?
Yeah, exactly
right. Is that the attitude?
I think it sometimes can be. And I think that, you know, sometimes that extends to men who work at home also. That
yes,
there's
of
a
course.
Sense that they're just not working as hard.
Yeah. What are you, sitting back and smoking cigars and just kind of, you know, you got your golf club in the backyard there doing the...
Yeah.
Well, that's not fair. Certainly, it seems there may be some truth to it, but there. That's,
you know, it's a question of employee productivity.
Yeah.
If the employees are working at home and they're getting their work done and they're performing satisfactory, to me, it doesn't really matter where the employee is sitting, assuming that it works within your workforce.
Paul, I'm going to try to see if you get on the air. Are you there?
I am.
Do you have a brief question you'd like to ask?
I do. Thanks for the great show.
Thank you.
I'd just like to get the guest's opinion about the San Francisco, the Supervisor Choose proposal to make a conversation between employers and employees mandatory for employees who are parents. I'm not sure if the guests are familiar with it, but I'd just like to know what they have to say about legislating this flexible work schedule.
Paul, I have to say, you'd have to hum a few more bars because I'm not familiar with that.
Can you give us just a little bit more information?
So David Chu, I'm actually reading from an article right here. So David Chu recently unveiled a proposal, Family-Friendly Workplace Ordinance, which would allow employees who are caregivers to request a wide range of flexible working arrangements. Mm. Employers would be able to deny the request only upon showing of undue hardship. If approved by voters, so I guess it's going to be on the ballot in November 2013, this ordinance would subject to any legal challenge take effect, blah, 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 blah.
Very interesting. Let me get a couple of comments for you. We've nearly come to the end of the statewide version of the program. We will continue, of course, but let me get a brief answer from one or both of my guests. Any comments on this?
You know, it doesn't surprise me, given that that's the way the private sector is trending, is more and more towards these arrangements.
I think that how well that works depends upon how the statute is written and what the requirements are. But it's certainly a conversation that I think is worth having.
I agree, Paul, that it's very interesting, and I had not heard about this also. Well, we've come to the end of the statewide version of the program. We will continue live for a second half hour. All right, everybody. It's about 7:28 and a half at 91.7, your local public radio station, KLW in San Francisco. I am now beginning to see the attorneys pulling, and I don't, they got four lines open, Martin, or four? Yeah, four lines are open. We have eight attorneys here, by the way, and let me tell you who they are. Workers' Compensation Law, Alice O'Sullivan, a certified specialist, former chair of the Board of Legal Specialization. Criminal Law, Jeff Hayden, who's a certified specialist. Jeff is the chair of the Criminal Law Commission of the Board of Legal Specialization. We have B.J. Fadum, a certified specialist in family law. We have Peter Fortune, who's a certified specialist in legal malpractice law. He is the chair of the Commission on Legal Malpractice. Eric Toscano. I think this is Eric's first time as a landlord-tenant attorney here. He is a landlord-tenant attorney, but I think it's his first time here. Dean Schmidt, who is also in, I think, Dean's first time here. He does also landlord-tenant as well as labor law. And then we have Laura Drossman, who was a guest of mine a couple of months ago. She is here to talk with you about entertainment law and business law. And Frank Adam is here, who's been here with us for years doing tax law and real estate. And then tomorrow, Thursday, June 27th, from 8:30 a.m. to 11, Leon Baer, a certified specialist in bankruptcy law, will be available to talk with you. No obligation whatsoever. He's very generous with his time. He'll be happy to try to give you some direction if you have questions about why are my creditors doing this to me. It's 1-800-477-3111, 1-800-477-3111 for Leon tomorrow and tonight for Call a Lawyer, 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-525-9917. On the program, on the air, it's 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. And don't be bashful. And let me see. We have Rose, do we?
Yes, we do. Hi.
Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, I have a question about Federal Medical Leave Act. I have been on it at my place of employment, and I have been utilizing intermittent FMLA because I do have bouts of my medical condition that come up and incapacitate me. And I have, my employer had actually at one point has disciplined me for this, and when I did some research, it looked like that was a no-no. And I am in a union position, and I'm just concerned about, you know, how that all plays out, the consequences.
How were you disciplined, Rose?
They suspended me for 5 days, and I lost 5 days.
And did you have your union
yes, I did.
Fighting for you?
We went into a mediation,
mm-hmm.
and unfortunately they couldn't all come to some kind of conclusion,
mm-hmm.
and they have dragged this out. It is almost a year,
wow.
to the day, almost, and I feel I've done nothing wrong, but I have a health condition that causes me problems to be out of work, and I've worked for this employer for quite a number of years. And I feel that I've been unjustly disciplined.
Well, let me mention something. The State Bar's ethics rules don't permit my guests to give specific legal advice, but
sure.
I think they can talk about some of the issues here that may be of some help to you. You are still working full time, I presume?
Yes, I'm still at the same with working with the same.
How many years you've been working there?
It's about 25 years.
No, 25 years.
Yes.
And this is what they've done to you. Oh, it sounds really wonderful.
Yes.
Let me get some comments from my guests on this. Who would like to start? You want to start, Sharon, please?
You know, it's really hard to say, Rose, exactly, you know, what the situation is. I mean, it's certainly the case that you're entitled to take FMLA leave on an intermittent basis, but there is a limit to how much leave that you can take within a given period of time. And there's information that you're required to provide on the request of the employer to justify your leave. But in general, one can't be disciplined merely for taking intermittent leave as long as you filled all of the requirements to give the information that's required to the employer.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I did. There was certifications from my doctors with each incident that I had been out for the intermittent days. I had my doctor providing certification to that effect. The thing about it that totally took me by surprise was that I was not talked to for a period of about 9 months, had no anticipation of them having, you know, any concern about my health and what was going on.
So all of a sudden they lowered the boom on you. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I was totally floored and thought that this would have been resolved within a matter of months because it took about, it was a few months after the incident that we went into mediation for them to get all these folks together, and they're still dragging their feet and they want me to sign an agreement whereby they don't want me to sue them or the union for anything pertaining to this dispute, and that they would pay me my full 5 days.
Hmm.
But I kind of feel like I don't want to give up my rights, and I don't know how California law affects that.
And Rose, you do have a lawyer, right?
I'm actually trying to obtain one at this time.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it seems it's very important that you have speak with a lawyer about this before you do anything, it seems to me, in terms of whether or not they want you to sign some kind of a document. Do you have any comments, Lisa, at this point?
No, I think Sharon said it well, and I think it sounds like a situation where advice from counsel, specific advice from counsel, would be useful.
Good luck to you, Rose.
Thank you so very much. Yeah. I really enjoyed the program very much, and boy, I'm excited. I wanted to talk about 10 stuff, too. You've got so much wonderful topics coming up.
I'm very happy with, frankly, I get a real great pleasure and satisfaction out of this program. Thank you very much for calling. By the way,
welcome.
Rose, where are you? Where do you work? What city?
San Francisco.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much for calling. I would suggest that you might want to call the lawyer referral service for the San Francisco Bar. Get at least an initial consultation with an employment lawyer who represents employees. There are lots of employment lawyers in San Francisco and connected to the Bar Association Lawyer Referral Service. And if you, and this is for everybody, by the way, if you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The Bar Association of San Francisco's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. This is a public service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, and for a referral to a lawyer, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. This information is brought to you by the Bar Association of San Francisco and KALW listeners like you. I do want you also to know that the Bar Association is a funder of this program. And also the lawyer referral service for the San Mateo County Bar Association is available if you're down in that county. And you can call your own. It's 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. The Bar Association of San Francisco is also a funder of this program. If you're in any other county in the state of California, every county has a bar association, a lawyer referral service. Call your own during normal business hours. You should get a human being to speak to. Tell them what the problem is. They'll do the best to find someone who's experienced for you. Set up a half an hour consultation with the attorney. Usually in the attorney's office, if you have a disability, I think they'll do their best to try to have a telephone conference for you. For half an hour, depending on the county, it could be anywhere from a low of $25 to maybe a high of $35. So for those of you who want to talk with our attorneys off the air, it's 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. I want to see those attorneys with phones to their ears. And if you'd like to talk to my guests on any range of employment law issues, it's 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134. And before we take our next call or we discuss about the next issue, last week, if you were listening, we did a program on family law. One of my guests was family lawyer Lauren Zorfus. Somehow we forgot during the course of the program she wanted to wish her 11-year-old son Brian happy birthday, and somehow we forgot.
Happy birthday, Brian.
So Brian, if you are there, happy birthday to you. Happy belated birthday. Okay, for those of you who want to call in, do so. Don't be bashful. Call in and let us know what's going on in terms of your involvement with your employer, or if you're an employer, your involvement with your employees. What are some of the other, let's say, significant issues today that you are dealing with, Lisa, from the standpoint of your employers, your clients, the employers?
You know, I most frequently get asked questions about leaves of absence.
Yes.
I think that tends to be one of the hardest areas for employers to
You mean because of sickness or?
Because of sickness, because of caring for a newborn, because of pregnancy disability. There's all sorts of leaves of absence issues that come up. And I'm sure Sharon gets those questions a lot as well.
Are employers having a difficulty in accommodating people
for, you know, I think
because of this?
A lot of small employers struggle with what the rules are, especially when it comes to pregnant employees.
Mm-hmm.
Pregnant employees need to be entitled to certain amounts of leave for pregnancy disability, which is a period of time after a baby is born. Women are considered disabled from childbirth.
How long is that?
Well, I think the state assumes for a normal birth 6 weeks.
Yes.
And for a cesarean section, 8 weeks.
Really?
And employees have to be given that time off if the employer meets a certain employee's threshold.
And without pay or with pay?
Without pay.
Without pay.
But with benefits.
With benefits.
Yes.
But they have to be taken back.
Yes.
If they want to come back.
Yes.
They have to be taken
back.
And
I think when you can you add on to that the time employees are allowed to care for a newborn baby, it can... It makes it difficult for employers, small employers.
What about the father? What about the husband father? Go ahead, Sharon, please.
I do just want to say something about the pay. And it is true that the employers have no obligation to pay. But in the state of California, we have paid family leave. It's a benefit that you pay into just like you pay Social Security or disability. Lots of employees are not aware of this benefit, but you can apply for paid family leave.
Who do you apply to?
To the state. It's administered in the same way that the disability insurance.
Really?
Yeah, and you can get...
And what is it called again?
It's called paid family leave or
paid
PFL.
Gee, that's terrific. I have never heard of this.
Many people don't know about it. There, you know, are limits. It doesn't provide, you know, 100%, but it certainly helps pay the mortgage and for the, you know, baby food and nappies, as they say abroad.
Well, all right. I want to get people calling in. What's wrong with you people? What's going on? What's going on? We need you to call in and ask questions. This is an important area of the law for you, for those of you who are working or employers who are trying to run a business. It's 1-415-841-4134. And for those of you who want to speak to my Call a Lawyer lawyers, that number is 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-525-9917. What if, let's say, the father of a child who's about to be born wants to spend some time with his wife and the baby? What right does the father have for family leave?
Well, you have to be the primary caregiver to take advantage of that.
Okay.
So in most situations, because of physiology, the woman, at least in the beginning, is the mm-hmm. primary caregiver of the mm-hmm. child.
So that's it.
Yeah.
The father cannot take off family leave time to be with the mom and the baby.
You can usually use your vacation time, but there's no federal or state law that requires them to give you protected leave.
Okay. Well, what else are you finding, Lisa, in your practice that is difficult or difficult for employers or maybe difficult for employees?
Oh, boy. You know, I think discrimination issues come up a lot and different types of discrimination.
What about age? Is that a problem?
I think age discrimination is a difficult problem. And I think... It's a more subtle form of discrimination that is very hard to prove in many mm-hmm. situations.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's definitely out there.
Mm-hmm. With the economy as it has become, where there are a lot of people out of work, there are a lot of foreclosures, there aren't as many jobs, et cetera, although supposedly the economy is improving. What do you find in your practice, Sharon, with respect to older persons who are claiming, gee, I was demoted or I was essentially let go because I was old or older, and they wanted to have someone younger? Do you have many cases like that?
Yeah, we have quite a few cases like that. I don't think that I've seen an uptick given mm-hmm. the economy and
age
cases.
Not. Okay.
No, but what I have seen an uptick in our office, at least, is in the last few years we've seen a dramatic increase in pregnancy discrimination cases.
Really?
And I do think that part of that is the economy.
Really?
Yes, absolutely.
So in terms of discrimination, how generally speaking, have they treated the women who are pregnant?
Well, typically they say that there's some sort of reorganization or changing of position so that when the woman goes off on maternity leave, there's no job for her.
You got rid of your job, yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, your job vanished.
Or if all of a sudden a woman goes off on maternity leave, and we've had a number of cases that before her maternity leave, she was a great performer.
Yeah.
Now she comes back and she's all of a sudden fallen apart, so they're managed out.
Mm.
And, I mean, at the moment, a substantial portion of the docket in our office is composed of these pregnancy discrimination
really?
Cases. Yes.
Really?
It's pretty stunning to us.
I'm astounded to hear that. All right, Jim, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I hope my question is relevant. I have been a small business owner for about 30 years, and I have sort of gone into semi-retirement, semi-unemployment. And I just received a summons this morning, or I was served for a lawsuit, and a former employee, and this is just about 2 years ago, was in an automobile accident while he was off hours, but wanted to drive back to pick up his paycheck. And I haven't talked to a lawyer yet. I just got served this morning. I'm basically in the process in the next 30 days, probably closing the corporation. And I'm living in Seattle now.
Where are you calling from? Are you calling from Seattle?
I am calling from, actually right now I'm in San Francisco.
Oh, are you?
My business
okay.
is in Oakland.
Yeah. Jim, let me ask you a question.
I've been subrogated as someone who's responsible for the damages that he caused.
What kind of damages are we talking about?
$17,000 and change.
He wants $17,000 from you?
His, the person he ran into, their insurance company has named me as a defendant with him.
Wow. But that was his car, right?
It was his car, and it was after he was off the time clock. And
he claims he was coming back to your business location to pick up his check?
Right, which I went out of the way to get processed early for him because he needed the money.
Oh my. I hope you have insurance, do you not?
I had insurance at the time, but I have this was a design build business. Mm-hmm. And I stopped my liability insurance when I stopped doing any construction.
Yeah, but you know, Jim, I think that you know this accident predates the termination of your insurance policy.
It does. I was insured during the time of this
yeah,
accident.
Yeah, I think you have a right, and I you know I'm not permitted to give you legal advice, but I certainly am consumer oriented, and I think you do have. You must look into the issue of whether or not your insurance company has a responsibility to defend you in this action, because I think it does. And so you must actually, where is the lawsuit filed?
It was filed in Alameda County.
Yeah. I think you really need, while you're here in San Francisco, you really need to contact, the Alameda County Bar Association and see if you can't speak with someone who does personal injury defense work, this kind of thing, and meet with that attorney.
Well, I think I will call my agent. I have not notified him yet to see if my insurances will help yet, but I know I need to respond. I mean, I was served today, and it was dated the 19th, so I've already lost a week.
Well, but wait a minute. Wait, if you were served today, under California law, you have 30 days within which to answer from the date you're served.
Okay.
That's
well, that helps, because I'm not in California, but about a week, a month at this point.
I mean, if you were personally served today, it's 30 days from the day you're served, you have to file your responsive pleading. But you don't want to put off, actually, I don't have the Alameda County Bar Association number, but you need to contact them and ask to have an initial consultation with an attorney who does personal injury defense. Do either of you have any comments on that?
No.
But that's what you have to do. And certainly call your agent, frankly, Jim. Your agent should be of some help to you. I presume you at this point don't have a business relationship with your agent, but your agent was the one who was taking care of you with a policy, right?
Yes, for about 20 some odd years.
Yeah, I think you need to call your agent. I hope your agent is still in business.
I believe he is.
Yeah, you better call tomorrow. Don't put
Thank
it
you
off.
Very much.
Yeah, good luck.
I'm only here through Friday, and I wanted to take care of this while I'm here.
You better. Okay. Nice to talk to you, Jim.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Good luck. I wish you the very best. All right. Here it is, Jim. If you're there. You still there? All right. If you're listening, Jim, here's the Alameda County Bar. Martin just brought it in to me. It's area code 510-302-2222. Okay. Alameda County Bar Association, 510, area code 302-2222. So, and then ask for lawyer referral and ask for someone who does personal injury defense for an initial half an hour consultation. It'll charge probably only $35. It's a great way to start, but you need to really move on it. All right, 1-415-841-4134. And for Call a Lawyer, 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-525-9917. I'm surprised you all are so quiet. It may be the decisions of Prop 8, maybe the DOMA decision, that people are focusing on that and kind of, got off track. Is there somebody there? I thought I heard somebody. No, I guess not. All right. So, again, I want to thank our attorneys who are here for Call a Lawyer. They have been very giving of their time, some of them for years. Alice O'Sullivan for workers' compensation, Jeffrey Hayden for criminal law, B.J. Fathom for family law, Peter Fortune, legal malpractice law, first time for Eric Toscano for landlord-tenant law, first time for Dean Schmidt, labor law as well as landlord-tenant law, first time for Laura Drossman, although she's been a guest on the program, for entertainment law and business law. Many, many years for Frank Adam for tax law and real estate. And again, many years for Leon Baer, who will be available to talk to you tomorrow about bankruptcy if you're concerned about that. Tomorrow, Thursday, June 27th, from 8:30 a.m. to 11 a.m., his number 1-800-477-3111. 1-800-477-3111. If you call and get his answering message, leave your name and phone number. He will call you back. He's very, very gracious with his time. All right, we have just a few minutes left, and I guess people are very quiet. This is the slowest program in terms of callers calling in that we have had in ages. And all I can say is maybe because of the warm weather, people are at the beach, or maybe they're focusing on the Supreme Court's decisions in Prop 8 and DOMA. I don't know. I find it very strange. Why don't we talk about some additional issues that you find in your practice, Sharon, that Sure. are commonly coming up?
The other issue that we've found a lot in our practice of late, and I think this is going to be a little surprising to most listeners, is that there's an uptick in sexual harassment cases that we're seeing.
Oh, I'm surprised at that.
Yeah, I think that most people believe that sexual harassment is something that, is well behind us and that people are sufficiently educated in what is and is not appropriate in the workplace. But in the last few years, much like with the pregnancy discrimination cases, we've seen a large uptick in sexual harassment cases, particularly sexual harassment cases going on down in the Silicon Valley in high-tech companies where I think there's still kind of an attitude of the Wild West and not very many rules. People like to believe that everybody's friendly, and sometimes there is not a very clear line between what's appropriate in the workplace and what is not. Mm-hmm. So we've had quite a number of these cases come to our office over the last few years, a surprising number.
Could you give us a rundown of the elements for sexual harassment? In other words, what should an employee who's being subjected to sexual harassment, what should he or she do in terms of trying to get the attention of whomever may be the appropriate person in the business, assuming it's not the CEO who's doing the sexual harassment?
Right. Well, obviously it varies depending on the size of the company, but the first thing that the employee needs to do is take a look at the personnel handbook and figure out from the handbook who it is that the individual should be talking to. It's certainly the law both in the state and federally that if you're being sexually harassed, if you go to your supervisor, if that's not the person who's harassing you, they're supposed to be required to take some steps. You can go to HR, mm-hmm. but as the employee...
Human resources.
But as the employee, it is your obligation to take some step to notify somebody in the company that you're being sexually harassed and to give the company an opportunity to do something appropriate about
it. Is it a practical thing to put that also into writing and deliver it to the appropriate supervisor, assuming that's not...
There's no legal requirement okay. that it be put in writing, but you know certainly you could never hurt by putting something in writing to it. Even if you don't feel comfortable spelling out all of the details about what's happened, it wouldn't hurt to follow up in writing saying, I just want to confirm I came to you yesterday to talk to you about being sexually harassed by my boss, Joe Schmo, and mm-hmm. I trust the company is going to investigate immediately.
Do you have any comments on that, Lisa?
No, I think Sharon's exactly right. I think employers really benefit from having a policy that sets forth clearly that they don't allow harassment and also to respond promptly to complaints and also to do training on harassment mm-hmm. for some of these younger
startups.
Isn't that
mandatory under California law?
Yeah, for certain size employers it is. So and mm-hmm. some employers don't know that, and with these young startups, they mm-hmm. aren't really this familiar with that.
Is there a certain number of employees that require employers who have sexual harassment training? Is that the criteria?
I think
criteria?
It's 50.
50. So 50 or above.
Right.
Under 50, there is no legal requirement.
Not legally required, but still advised. Mm-hmm.
And certainly if there is sexual harassment in a business that has under 50 employees, that still is an actionable case.
Definitely.
Civil case. All right. We have Steve. You're brave to call in, Steve. Welcome to Your
no
Legal
problem.
Rights.
My pleasure. This is a great program and so timely. Two quick things I wanted to point out and to ask about. One was the decision by the Supreme Court that they just came down with a couple of days ago as far as what constitutes a supervisor. They said they had to have the ability to hire and fire, not just supervise your work. I thought that was a very interesting case.
When you say the Supreme Court, which California...
The Supreme Court of the United States
of America.
I'm not
aware of that case.
Yeah, well, it just came down.
Okay.
And then also I wanted to ask about what's the extent to which people are not allowed to discriminate. Say I was a sports fan, and I work for a person who hated sports and says, you know something? I don't like people that are sports fans.
So he cans you because you're a sports fan, huh?
Right, right. I mean, not even if I liked the Yankees or Red Sox or something, but
let me see if I can.
That was an issue, yeah.
Let me get to.
Thank you.
Turn your
great
radio
job,
back
yeah,
up.
I'm all set.
Yeah, okay, Steve, thank you. All right, what about the supervisor and the new, are you familiar with the new Supreme Court case, Chairman?
I am. The case came down on Monday. It's called Vance versus Ball State University, and it's a case that's decided under federal law. Mm-hmm. So from our perspective, and when I say I mean, you know, plaintiff's employment attorneys, it's going to not have nearly as much impact in California as it will in other states. And what the case said is that it's a pretty technical opinion, but it says that sexual harassment, there's no strict liability on the part of the employer unless the supervisor is someone who has the power to hire, fire, promote, demote, and take some other actions. There's been a lot of discussion about the fact that it's going to exempt from that strict liability standard employers, people who act in a managerial role on a day-to-day basis but don't necessarily have the power to hire, fire, and promote.
I see. What about the second one? Sports fan discriminated against and booted out because I don't like sports fans.
So far, that's not a protected characteristic
not
in California.
Yet.
Steve, I don't think it's going to be.
Steve, keep working on it. That's your assignment. That's your assignment. Well, I think we're getting very close to the end of the program. I want to thank you both very much for joining us on
Our
Your
pleasure.
Legal Rights. My guests have been members of the Executive Committee of the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, Sharon Vinnick, whose office is in Oakland, and Lisa Lawson, whose office is in San Francisco. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Very nice to have you here. Your Legal Rights production people on this program are The production engineer, Joanne Marr, and production assistant is Martin McLean. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar of California. Additional funding is provided by the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, of course, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. Next week, we're going to be talking about, is our right of privacy gone? We're going to be talking about civil liberties and focusing on the right of privacy. My guests are civil liberties attorneys. They are Hani Fakhouri, Shahid Buttar, and Ben Rosenfeld. So if you're interested in that, please join us and figure out, is your right of privacy gone? That's the issue. Thanks for joining us on Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney.